Soccer Matters, Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Quick word here for Advantage BMW in Midtown. Get down to Advantage BMW. Get the 3, a 5, a 7 series Advantage BMW Midtown. You'll get yourself in a Houston hometown advantage situation. Advantage BMW Houston.com. And thanks to Advantage BMW in Midtown, we bring on the head coach of the Houston Dynamo, Tab Ramos. Tab, thank you very much for coming on the program as always.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
All right. So far this week, as you prepare for Sporting Kansas City, maybe just some general idea as to what's been going on in training. I know it's been a short week so far.
Yeah, I mean, it has been really short. We obviously we were off yesterday. Today we got back to training. Unfortunately, our session had to be cut short because of lightning warnings. The alarm went off, so we were towards the end of training, but most of the training today was small-sided. We're trying to get guys a little bit more, strength. You know, Tuesdays we've been focusing more on, like, small-sided stuff so they can be on the ball more, so they can, defend better, that type of stuff. So that's what we're doing today. Tomorrow we go into a little bit of a bigger field, maybe a little bit of 11v11, that kind of thing to start. Really, tomorrow's the last day we can push a little bit, and then after that we have to wind down and start getting ready for the game.
Great insight as to what's going down at the training park. Head coach Tab Ramos joining us here. Let's talk a little bit about, I heard you mention the small-sided stuff, and as much as I know you were very happy with the win and the performances of players, I do know the consistent theme of the possession game, and it seems like that's still something that you are very, very focused on.
Yeah, I mean, it's been difficult. It's been difficult for us to hold on to the ball. With less of the ball, we've been more dangerous. So we want to, we want to continue to have that balance. You don't want to be, at the end of the day, you don't want to be the team that has all the possession but can't create opportunities. Sometimes, holding the ball for too long limits you from creating opportunities. It depends on the kind of team you have. Obviously, LAFC is a little bit different. They can have possession a lot as they're picking spots to attack. We're a little bit more of a faster attack type team, so it's a little bit more difficult to hold the ball, but we're working on it.
Tab, you did mention before the last game, and this was really interesting that you said it ahead of time, that you were going to look to play a little bit more direct and vertical to Fafa Pico and Maxi Arruti, and that seemed to pay a lot of dividends in this game against Vancouver.
Yeah, that was we felt we were going to have space in front of their back four for Maxi to receive. And then felt like our wingers could run, when that happens, to find the space behind. And I think we had some success with that. So I think for, in particular for playing Vancouver, I think that worked pretty well.
So I know this is a process, and in each and every week, you and your staff are huddling together and you're looking at things to work on. How much, is the week based on the prior game, and how much is based on the upcoming opponent, as in this case, Sporting Kansas City?
I mean, games are based on everything. You take everything into account. The last game, the game before that, the next game, the game after that. I mean, everything counts. I mean, obviously, the most important thing is to win the game that you have coming up, no matter when you're playing it. At the end of the day, we are not, Seattle, we're not LAFC. We have to focus on this game. And then after this game, we look at the rest of the games. But having said that, we have to look at all the positive things we've been doing, and we've been doing a lot of them. I can, pretty confidently say that, the goal that Vancouver scores on us, and the reason Vancouver got back into the game was really mostly on us. Not taking any credit away from Vancouver, because they have a great team. They have great players on the team. But I think we sort of let them in the game with a mistake that we made. We made a couple of mistakes in Colorado that cost us the game. Yeah, that was with a different lineup, but it doesn't matter. I think we were well prepared for that game too. But, a long ball from a goalkeeper that could have been easily handled turned into a goal. Obviously Marco had that mistake in the back. So I feel like if, if we can, you know, if we can limit our mistakes, we can be a lot more solid. It doesn't mean we're going to win games every week, but it does mean that we become even harder of an out than we are now. And I think we're a pretty hard out right now.
So you talked about some of the cons, which was eliminating mistakes, the possession. How about some of the pros out of that game? The things that you thought were really positive that you're happy with that may be developing a consistent theme for you?
You know, it starts here every day, Glenn. You know, I can feel it in the locker room. From my office, I can hear the guys in the locker room, you know, having a good time, enjoying being in the locker room, enjoying being with each other. The atmosphere is completely different than it was last year. And it you know, if I could say it correctly, it didn't happen backwards. It didn't happen that all of a sudden, you know, we won games and that's why everybody's happy. It happened the other way around. I think the guys are happy here. They're working hard. And because of that, we are getting results as well. And I think from that aspect, I think we've become a team. And it doesn't mean we're going to win all the games, but it does mean that you know, these guys are fighting together. And I think that's the number one positive situation that we have going right now.
As a coach, how close can you get to people? In other words, you know, you are the head man. You have to make tough decisions each week that disappoint people. There's no question. That's what you probably want, you know. How close can you get to people when it comes to personally? Because you do have to work with everybody every day on a personal basis.
Yeah, I mean, I get as close as they, I want to say, as they allow me without me interfering, really. You know, at the end of the day, they're young guys. They want to have a good time. They don't want, you know, the 50-year-old coach to be hanging around all the time. I mean, that's just the bottom line. You know, I got to hang out with people my age.
You're a smart man, and you're aging gracefully.
Yeah. So I look at, you know, my oldest kids. My son is, you know, 25, and my daughter's 23. You know, so they're kind of the same age as some of these guys. But I try to be close. They know they can lean on me. I think, you know, they know my door is open. I think that's a question more for them, but they're very confident and comfortable with me here. So, yeah, so it's been good. I think we have a good relationship with all the guys. And like you said, it's really difficult because I have 20-plus players that I get to select from every week, you know, 25, 26. And even the 20 that make it on the travel team, I can only play 11. So, you know, there's going to be 15 guys that are upset every week. And they should be, by the way. And I wouldn't want it any other way. But it's not easy. It's not easy.
Yeah, you've had a lot of experience with this. I mean, I can only imagine the choices you had to make at the under-20 national team level when somebody's that close and they have to be let go.
Yeah, you know, a great example of that is guys like Jackson Ewell, you know, Christian Roldan. You know, I can go down the line. Frankie Amaya. Those are guys I had to cut. I mean, not only did they not make the starting 11, they didn't make the 20. Those are guys that didn't make the team. And those are great players. But there were other great players who were great players. So in the end, somebody's going to miss out. And that happens, unfortunately. I think, you know, as a coach, normally you're pretty clear on, you know, 7 or 8, 9 guys every week. But there's a couple that you could choose either way. And, you know, and sometimes somebody feels like they should be getting picked instead of someone else. And that's okay.
Todd Bramos, head coach of the Houston Dynamo, joining us. In the case of those guys, don't those become motivating moments? I mean, I'm sure you've had a moment, and you've had moments in your career where it hasn't worked out perfectly. And knowing the type of person that you are, you used it as motivation, I would think.
That's what you have to do, and you have to take advantage of your opportunities. You can't get upset if in a game you go in for 6 minutes or 7 minutes. You just have to make the best out of your 6 or 7 minutes that you can, and maybe make one play, maybe whether it's defensively or attacking wise, make one play that, you know, that the coach will remember, because he'll remember that. And chances are he'll give you more minutes after. And that it always works like that with every coach.
All right. Now I notice you're giving a lot of praise and also a lot of tough love to some of the younger players. I'll go right to Memo Rodriguez, who was involved in 2 very critical plays in this win. Obviously, the good corner to Arruti, and then being the sharp man in the penalty box after the Fafa work out wide. But I do see you pushing him on the side of the possession game and being more direct. And, you know, this is a daily piece of work for you, right?
I mean, this is coaching. You know, this is what coaching is about. You have to try to get the most out of every player that you have. And whether they're young or they're old, you want to push them to try to be at their best. And you have to, you know, it takes a little time to figure out how to push everybody's buttons, because everybody's buttons are different. You know, some people get upset in certain ways and some get motivated in certain ways. And it's not easy finding that balance sometimes.
Derek Jones obviously looked good in possession. I mean, he kept the ball for you well. Are you happy with how he's progressing?
Yeah, I mean, Derek has to still, there's a lot of improvements to make. I think he's coming along well. I think he's the player that we thought he was, and he's helping us win games. I mean, you know, at the moment, we have to say we're very happy with where he is, but we will not stop asking for more, because he can be better.
Sporting Kansas City, yeah, it's hard to believe we're playing them again, but your good friend Peter Vermes, I feel like we just had this conversation. Obviously, they're in a pretty good place, 6 goals in 2 games. Is it a different Sporting to you right now?
Yeah, I mean, Sporting is a great team. You know, they're one of the contenders for the championship every year, and this year is no different. So, you know, they have skilled players everywhere. At the same time, we know that we also have dangerous players in attack. So I think one of the things that we've done well against Kansas City, and hard to believe, but I think we played them 6 or 7 times already since I've been here, is we attack them, you know, and we press them, and we make them earn all their plays. And so far, you know, it's been a battle back and forth. You know, it's been a 50-50 battle, and it doesn't mean that we can't lose this game, but it certainly does mean that we can win this game. And so we're going to go for it, just like we always do.
Playing at Sporting Kansas City, and I know because of the pandemic, there hasn't always been the crowd, but it seems to be one of the tougher environments in the league. It seems to have one of the most engaged fan bases.
I think we have to remember that last time we played them with a full stadium was last year, and we lost 4-0. So I think that's a good motivation for us to go to Kansas City with.
Tab, last one before we let you go. Peter Vermes, such a great friend of yours. When you get into these matchups with him, because you know him so well, does that give you any sort of advantage? Because he knows you probably as well as you know him. Do you feel like in ways there you can kind of put yourself in Peter's mind thinking?
A little bit, but I don't think that's necessarily an advantage, because the one thing I know about Peter is that he's a very intense coach, and I know what he asks from his players, which is very similar to what we ask here now. I mean, it's full commitment for 90 minutes and full commitment every single day of training for every minute we're on the field. No less than that. That's what we ask for, and I know that's what he asks for from his team, and that's why, you know, it makes it difficult, but also, you know, he has had a lot of success, and I think we, you know, we have to sit back and look at all the great things he's done and respect that, because he's, you know, he's a great coach.
All right, sneaking one more in here. Joe Corona, I know you've had him in subtly different roles each time in a couple of the games. Is that fair to say so far this year? Maybe you pushed him a little higher in some games to play make, maybe a little bit more balanced at times. Is it tough figuring out where to put Joe? Because obviously he's so good to have on the ball.
I mean, Joe is such a great player, you know. He's a great player both on both sides of the ball. He's a very honest defender. You know, he gives you maximum effort all the time, and he has silky smooth feet to make passes. And so, you know, yeah, sometimes it depends on the midfield we use. You know, if we use Matias Vera as a complement to Derek Jones, then Joe Corona becomes more of the attacker out of the three. If we use Memo as a complement to Derek Jones, then Joe becomes more the complement to Derek Jones, and now Memo becomes more the attacking. So yeah, it's a slight difference, but at the end of the day, you know, Joe is a great soccer player, so he can fit into any of those roles.
Tab, thank you so much. As usual, best of luck against Sporting Kansas City. We appreciate your time as always.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Tab Ramos, head coach of the Houston Dynamo. We'll take a break here. It's brought to you by Advantage BMW Midtown.
ESPN 97.5.
Hello, people. This is Alexi Lawless, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters. Here, quick word here for FM Kitchen and Bar. It's Southern American cuisine. By the way, the reason I like it, well, number one, it's near where I live. But number two, it is a place where you can get a great craft cocktail along with great food. The burgers, the chicken sandwiches, the salads, absolutely outstanding. It's all fresh ingredients. They're at 1112 Shepherd Drive. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. FMKitchenandBar.com. Go over there, see my good friend Jason. It is a fantastic place. Outdoor patio, wonderful as well. Dog friendly, kid friendly. Every type of person there. It's just a great, great mix of people. And get the house salad, by the way. Fantastic to go along with any of the other entrees that they have, including the great burgers and chicken sandwiches. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. By the way, Hugh O'Connor's just down the road on I-10. Well, guess what? That is the home of Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 and the European Championships. That's where we'll be having watch parties there. We're going to do live radio shows there. We're going to be giving away tickets. We're going to be giving away jerseys, all kinds of gifts, special guest co-hosts with me every Tuesday night. It is going to be live broadcasts in June. So be ready for it. Get over there. Hugh O'Connor's, proud sponsors of Soccer Matters, and we're going to let the good times roll there. All right, coming up now, Brian Chiaretta, American Soccer Now, does a real deep dive on the American talent that is around the country, and we're also talking a little bit about the Nations League roster that Greg Berhalter has chosen. Brian, how are you?
Doing great, Glenn, up here in sunny New Jersey. We miss you up here.
Yeah, I was just up there. It was a great trip up there, and it was a great time of the year to be there. And every time we do interviews, it's always great to get that Garden State connection. Mm-hmm. All right, let's start with the Nations League roster for the United States. Just give us a good overview of that roster and maybe foreshadowing a little what will ultimately be the Gold Cup roster in CONCACAF.
Well, I think it's a roster that doesn't really surprise anybody. I mean, just about everybody on the team has played this year under Berhalter, and I think it's good to see guys like Yedlin back. Those are the big stories. I think everything kind of goes sideways a little bit depending on Tyler Adams' injury. They included him on the roster, but he's able to be replaced 24 hours before the first game. But you know, I think if he doesn't play, the team changes how it wants to go. So how it wants to play. Look, I think it was a good roster. I think a lot of the names picked itself. I think surprising, if you're looking for some surprises, Daryl DK's cut was pretty interesting, because I guess it looks like Jordan Cibichu has overtaken him on the depth the forward depth chart. But other than that, it looks very close to what the team will look like come World Cup qualifying, and then you'll take a couple of the best guys from the Gold Cup team, and there's your team right now. So, it's time to get excited and follow the team now as they play meaningful games.
Brian Chiaretta joining us from American Soccer Now. Let me take you back to what you said about Daryl DK. I watched his game this weekend where Barnsley just fell short of getting into that final game to potentially be promoted in the Premier League. You mentioned Jordan Cibichu. He's playing at Young Boys in Switzerland. Why is Jordan Cibichu overtaken Daryl DK with that body and that Premier League body and physicality that he has?
Well, I think Cibichu is obviously he was he helped carry Young Boys to the Swiss title, and he had a lot of goals. I believe he had 13 in the regular season and 3 in the Europa League, all against Bayer Leverkusen. So there's no slouch there. And I think, he ended the season playing very, very well. I thought, Daryl had 9 goals in 19 games with Barnsley, which was very, very good. But if you watch those last couple games, I don't necessarily put it all on Daryl DK here either, but it was tough to watch because I think they were just launching balls up to him, hoping he could win them and make some magic with them. And that was not the best. That didn't put him in a good position to succeed. And I think it was a judgment call. I think Cibichu was a little older. They liked what they saw from him in March. Daryl will get plenty more times with the team. He's going to continue to he's going to play in the Switzerland game. He's going to travel with the team. and then play with them in the Costa Rica game after the Nations League. But, you know, I think this is just a wake-up call to Daryl that, you know, he played well at Barnsley, but there's a lot of competition, Aaron. You know, competition brings out the best in everybody, and we'll see, you know, if this, you know, if this realize shows to Daryl that he has to do even more.
All right, let's talk about Tim Way at Lille. I love the fact that Lille won the French League over PSG, but he did not play there a lot. He's also on the roster. Where does Tim Way stand?
Well, I mean, he played a lot of games. He just didn't play a lot of minutes. He was mostly just a sub. He didn't even hit 900 minutes on the season, you know, over 28 appearances. So, you know, just it was kind of sporadic with him. But look, I think it was a great season for Tim because the year before, the 19-20 season, was a lost year for him, essentially, because he had two bad hamstring injuries, only played a handful of minutes, and that was it. Now they eased him back into it. And what I like about being part of a team like this is you're surrounded by excellence. It promotes a culture of winning. He can bring that into the U.S. national team. And I think that's all very, very important. Next year will have to be more. He will have to play more to keep his spot on the national team. But, you know, look, I think he achieved what he wanted to achieve this year. And I think you'll probably see him playing more on the wing as opposed to center forward. He can play both. He gives some speed and some depth there on the wing position, which I think is very good. So, you know, kudos to him. And it just sets the stable and table for next year and raises the expectations a little bit higher, which is good for a 21-year-old.
Yeah, that's where we saw him playing in under 20 World Cups as well, in a wide area. Let me go to one of the intriguing ones. And again, we're talking to Brian Charette, American Soccer Now. Highly recommend it's AmericanSoccerNow.com. Go over there, read Brian's columns. He does a tremendous amount of research on players all over the world. And so a lot of times he'll bring up a name of a player, and I'm like, oh, okay, who's that? And it's very interesting. So we appreciate that. Yunus Musah, Valencia. Talk to me about him, and what else have we heard about him since he's broken into the U.S. national team?
Well, you know, obviously appearing in the Nations League cap ties him permanently, and that's going to be a you know, an exciting moment. Look, I think his appearances with the national team have been excellent so far, and he really likes playing with the U.S. national team because they allow him to play centrally at Valencia. He plays wide right. You know, he lost his starting spot, and his minutes have kind of been sporadic. But when he comes into the U.S. team, particularly in March, you know, he's looked great. He thrives centrally, and you know, eventually, you know, next year he's still very, very young. At only an 18-year-old, he's one of the youngest guys in the pool that has a chance to start. I like him. I think he can be a very valuable player. But you know, eventually he's going to need to play more than he did this year. But this was really essentially his first year as a first team player. Very exciting player. Such good control. He's so smooth and so strong. No real noticeable weaknesses from what he's shown with the U.S. team. So these will be important games now for him, for the U.S. team, and a chance to really solidify his starting role heading into World Cup qualifying.
Brian Charette, American Soccer Now, in his article, he mentions 23 players on this U.S. roster for the Nations League. 8 of them have played in UEFA Champions League games, and it is really unprecedented times for American players overseas. Weston McKennie, his run-through with Juventus, your thoughts?
That was a great first season. You know, it wasn't the season that that Juventus wanted to have. I mean, they saw its Scudetto run ended after 9 years. But Weston's kind of shown to be part of the team's future. A little, you know, he does a lot of, he really serves as that glue in the midfield and can really link up well with some elite players and play a physical game defensively too. They really like how he can play on both sides of the ball. You know, I didn't think really since March was his best soccer for the club. He had some good moments, like in the Coppa Italia final. That was very good. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he really needs some rest in the offseason to heal because, you know, he was dealing with some small injuries, some hip injuries that I think really need some time away from the game. And I think when he comes back, he'll be just as strong as he was at his high point. But he's got to get through these Nations League games. Part of being a soccer player is being on the grind. But yeah, I think he answered a lot of questions and proved he belonged at the highest levels of the game this year. And lucky for them, they got the result from Hellas Verona, taking down Napoli, or at least pulling even with them. If Napoli had won that game, Juventus would have been out of the Champions League, which I think would have been a big setback for, you know, McKennie to get those kind of experiences during a World Cup cycle, qualifying cycle. So, it all kind of worked out for him in the end, and now he's just got to get through these games and rest. But I like his future's bright.
Former Philadelphia Union attacker Brendan Aaronson at Salzburg. They win the title there. He got two assists in the final match of the year, I believe. And you believe this is a kid that's being fast-tracked to getting over to the Bundesliga?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. You don't go to, you know, Salzburg and play it as much as you did, as you do there without, having big aspirations in the club, have big aspirations for you. I mean, this is a place you just look who Jesse Marsh has worked with, Patson Daka and Erling Haaland. These are just guys, I mean, they just regularly churn out really good players. And Aaronson has comparable stats at this point to some of the best midfielders that they've had at that club in recent years. So he's put on a very good track. I think it's still too early probably to talk about him going to Leipzig. Nothing's impossible. It might be a cheap way for Leipzig to replenish its midfield during a day when not everyone can spend a lot of money, but I think you'd benefit to staying at Salzburg for the first half of the year, playing in the Champions League, playing under another manager, getting a different level of perspective, working on his German even more. And then maybe in January, if this Champions League games have played well and the team's in first place, maybe then you can look at a move to Leipzig, but he will get there. He's going to get to the Bundesliga sooner than later. He's been that good. He's lived up to the billing.
Cameron Carter-Vickers, here's another guy just like Daryl Dike at Barnsley that just fell short in the playoffs in the championship over in England. How about an update on him?
I think Tottenham is going to extend their contract under him. I know they will. It'll be the final year of his contract. They want to be able to sell him. And his last two loans have all been excellent. They've been the best soccer of his career, which is you want to see a player on the ascent. You know, last year he helped Luton Town to avoid relegation, which was miraculous, by the way. They were so far in last place. He got there and they brought him up into safety. This year he took a Bournemouth team and they got him into the playoffs, and they just lost that game over the weekend because a teammate picked up a red card that had nothing to do with Vickers. And I think he's in a good position now. Maybe even get a Premier League loan. He's been in six different championship teams. Now I think he can make that jump, maybe to a lower team that needs some more defending. He's not going to play artfully out of the back, but there is a role for him on some teams. Very good defensively. I don't think he's in favor of, he's in the plans for Greg Berhalter, but maybe in the Premier League, he might force Greg Berhalter to change his mind and rethink things if he gets into the Premier League.
All right. Talk to us a little bit about Leon Flack, who was born in, believe it or not, outside of Houston in Humble, Texas. Tell us a little bit about this midfield player for the Philadelphia Union, because he's one you think we should keep an eye on.
I do. I think he's been one of the better young newcomers in the league. Defensive midfielder, number eight midfielder for Philadelphia. And it was money spent on the Brendan Aaronson sale wisely. For his background was his parents worked, got a job in Houston, and he was born here. Then he moved back to Germany. But he was he played for Germany's youth national teams. But he decided to start accepting US U-20 call-ups. If this was a normal year, absent a pandemic, right now as we speak, he would be with the US U-20 team at the World Cup. They really liked him. They liked him a lot. And now he's come to Philadelphia and just been a really good addition to that midfield. A player that, if he keeps this up another month or two, he might be on that Gold Cup team. You know, you never know, at least a January camp, and then we'll see where things go. But a very good defensive midfielder. And the U.S. team needs more of those guys, too. He's not fun to play against if you're playing against Philadelphia right now. And their team is improving as he's taking on more and more of a role. And kudos to Philadelphia. They really can find young. They don't just develop players. They also bring good young players in.
Last one before we let you go, Brian. Looking at this Nations League roster, give us your idea as to what you think the Gold Cup roster kind of will look up makeup-wise.
Well, I think the Gold Cup is going to consider, there's going to be no overlapping players. But I think some players were left off this team so that they could get, as opposed to being maybe a second choice or a backup player on Nations League, they'll be a starter on the Gold Cup team, and then you'll see them in World Cup qualifying. Matt Turner comes to mind. first and foremost, the starting goalkeeper for New England. I think he can be the number two behind Stefan right now at the moment. Sam Vines, the left back for Colorado, is another player I think could be very good. Eric Palmer Brown, Miles Robinson are central defenders I think you're going to see. Justin Che is another 2003 born player at Bayern Munich. He's going to be sold from Dallas to Bayern Munich in the next coming weeks. Eric Williamson, I think Leon Flack is one to watch. Luca De La Torre, it's not going to be all MLS-based players. I think Luca De La Torre might be a starter. He starts for Heracles in the Eredivisie. Then you're going to see some regulars too, like Paul Areola, Jassy Zardes, and then maybe Matthew Hoppe, the kid at Schalke, who started scoring some goals here and there during the Bundesliga season. These are all some names to keep an eye on. And some other guys, too, have been playing abroad for the team recently, Tyler Boyd, Nicholas Giacchini. There's a lot of players to go around too, that the U.S. field team at the Gold Cup and also compete at the Gold Cup and do well. And these players can also make cases for themselves to be part of the U.S. team come World Cup qualifying. So it's exciting. There's going to be a lot of they got opportunities.
I was going to say, exciting times for U.S. fans because they're going to get to see in a very short amount of time a lot of the talent overseas that maybe they don't get to see or don't watch regularly. I mean, I agree with you 100%. This is going to be exciting times here.
Absolutely. And, some people are going to rise to the occasion. Some people are not going to take advantage of it. It's going to go up and down. And how we think about this team come August after all the soccer is done with World Cup qualifying approaching is going to be vastly different than how we think about it right now. And unfortunately, injuries and some players falling out of favor with their clubs, it's unfortunate. But, these are all realities you have to deal with, and it's going to happen. And it's always the next man up mentality that they have is who's going to fill that void. So things change very quickly, and it's going to be this is going to be a big two, three months.
Yeah, big assessment period for the U.S. manager, Greg Berhalter. Brian Schiaretta, American Soccer Now, thank you so much, as always, for coming on. Brian, thanks for all the great insight. And, boy, that was a lot jammed into about 14 minutes there. So that's great stuff on your part. Thank you very much.
Anytime, Glenn. Thank you.
So that was Brian Schiaretta. Big thank you to Brian for coming on the show and doing some Nations League roster deep dive. And we'll see. It is a big summer with the Gold Cup, Nations League, Olympics, European Championships. On and on we go. Houston Dynamo and Major League Soccer and the Dash and the NWSL. Moment here for FM Bar and Kitchen, Southern American Cuisine. It's right across Washington Avenue on Shepherd going north. It is a great spot. I went over there a couple of weeks ago with my friend Bill McDonough, who played for the old Houston Dynamos. We caught a Manchester United game there. My plan is to maybe catch a little bit of the United Europa League final there tomorrow afternoon. They got a lot of monitors outside. They got picnic tables everywhere. You can get spread out. Tremendous craft cocktails. I mean, if you do a nice gin and tonic, they'll give you the Fever Tree tonic water. Nothing off the gun. Great craft cocktails. And then along with it, great, great food. It's FM Kitchen and Bar, 1112 Shepherd Drive. You can check them out on the web. They've got all kinds of great cuisine there. FMKitchenandBar.com. We'll take a break at Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
Wheel. Fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5.
Hi, this is Oliver Luck, and you're listening to Soccer Matters on 97.5 with the irrepressible Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Quick word here for the presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they're going to take your case. Car, boat, motorcycle, you might work in a refinery, you might drive an 18-wheeler. John and his firm will handle your case, and they'll work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. It's DaspitLaw.com. That is the number to call. And John's a big soccer fan, and he will be watching Chelsea in the Champions League final. Tremendous moment this past week at the NCAA National Championship. Marshall, under Chris Grassi, winning the national championship against Indiana. It was a Jameel Roberts 98th minute dramatic game winner. First unseeded team to win the national championship, and we're pleased to have Chris Grassi, the head coach, join us now. Chris, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Hey, Glenn, thanks for having me on.
All right, so, you know, this was drama at its best. You got past clubs and programs like Clemson, Georgetown. You know, have you pinched yourself here as to what you guys have accomplished? I mean, I know you're a group that believes in itself, led by you, but this really was a remarkable run.
Yeah. I mean, I thought, like you said, I thought we were definitely capable. I thought, you know, being unseeded was just fuel to the fire a little bit, because I thought we felt we should have been seeded based on what we accomplished last year and the fact that we kind of returned the majority of the squad and we actually improved and got better, obviously. But yeah, I mean, the Clemson match, you know, I said after that, we're not here to beat number one. We're here to beat number one. Was kind of a rallying cry, I think, for the guys. And I think that was the first time, I think they believed it, and then they knew it after that, after beating Clemson. I thought the guys played really well. And then Georgetown, obviously, was, I thought that was my favorite match. You know, their movement, that game was like a chess match. It was brilliant. I loved our guys' composure during it. And, you know, UNC, you know, that was a tough match. They were very, very tough defensively, tough to break down. I think it was a great matchup. And then Indiana was kind of the most, I guess, the sort of, our guys were free to play. They just enjoyed it. I love watching them just express themselves. And you know, we build out of the back very much. I mean, I think, you know, we weren't a surprise to everybody at that point in terms of just how we're just going to keep the ball and play. And I think, you know, you look at the Y Scout, it was 70%, 30% possession. Our guys were a little bit freer in that game and they expressed themselves. And it was just a joy to watch, you know. And like I said, I watched the game the other night, first time back, you know, just had a beer and sat and watched it myself and kind of, a little bit emotional at the end of it, you know. It's, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and just sitting by myself on my couch, and it was, you know, just watching their faces, you know, when they've done it, and all guys was just so, it was so brilliant. It was, you know, I don't know if it's sunk in yet. I don't know if the ramifications for my family, for Huntington, for the program, you know, in terms of the support and investment and stuff that we're getting now. I don't know if that's really sunk in yet, but you know, it's. I'm just going from one thing to the next, and then maybe in July I'll have some time to settle down and just take it all in.
Chris Grassi joining us. Marshall winning the national championship, the Thundering Herd, over Indiana. You know, what's really interesting about you is you played your college soccer at a good program in West Virginia, Alderson Broaddus, who I know very well. But then you moved on to your playing and coaching career, and you have done a lot of coaching in the United States. You've been an assistant at Michigan. You've been an assistant at AB. You've worked under Bob Gray, who is the head man at AB, and Marshall. So in some ways, you know, soccer in America has helped shape you as a coach. Is that fair to say?
100%. 100%. You know, I'm an American citizen now and very proud of that fact. You know, my wife and kids are American, and you know, I've ended up spent a lot of time in the U.S., a lot of time in West Virginia, you know, just coaching and, you know, look at role models, even outside of sort of my own career and the people I've got to work with. But, you know, guys like Caleb Porter, I was a huge fan of. We played against him every year when he was at Akron. You know, Jay Vidovich was the first one that I saw Wake Forest. I'm like, I really liked it. 2007 was the first college cup I ever went to see, and I watched them guys, his Wake Forest team play. Beautiful possession football, exciting, entertaining, just the way that, you know, Kevin Keegan would do it at Newcastle. You know, maybe a little bit less direct than Kevin Keegan for sure, but, you know, exciting, and I really enjoyed it. And I thought, oh, this is fantastic. And then watching what, you know, Caleb was able to do at Akron and sort of in a very similar area to us, and you know, that was really inspiring and playing the game the way that I thought it should be played. So, you know, there's those guys as much as sort of the Pep Guardiolas and people that you look outside and people, you know, that I've had coaches, you know, in my career that have kind of inspired me as much as anybody else. So, yeah, I'm a product of American soccer, college soccer, as much as, or more than anywhere else, really.
Chris, I just want to take you into, you know, the attention now the university gets, and that's a prideful thing as well. You have a very prideful athletic program overall, a lot of history, but talk a little bit about, you know, sort of the reaction of the campus. I mean, you had unbelievable traveling support to Cary, North Carolina, and what this means for the overall university, the student body, and everybody associated.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've had some, it's been phenomenal. Look, we had 5,000 tickets available for the game. We sold 5,000 tickets. You know, it was a men's and women's event. And, you know, we had Marshall fans trying to buy tickets off Santa Clara. And, you know, those guys, as they were leaving, you know, our fans were there rooting Santa Clara on because they were on our bench, you know. So it was a great experience. If we had had 10,000, we would have sold 10,000 tickets. It was just, there was guys in the parking lot still like partying because they couldn't get into the stadium. It was an amazing, amazing response. And we've had that here a little bit. You know, we broke the record a couple of times for attendance. You know, we get 2,200 people in here. I mean, it's people standing room only. It's packed, you know, so it's not big enough for that level of support. And so it's just, we've just kind of felt it in 2019 and then even more so now. And the whole community, you know, we talked about the attendance for the game was up, you know, whatever it was, 179%, the viewership, and then we have 400% increase in clicks on our website. And, you know, it's going to be good for everybody. This is a massively passionate sports fans. Marshall have massively passionate sports fans. And, you know, this is an area that really cares about Marshall athletics and really cares about Marshall soccer. And so we have the great support from the local club. You know, WVFC have kind of come out in force to help us, and all those young kids kind of look up to our kids in terms of their top of the pyramid and sort of something to aspire to. And, you know, we've had amazing alumni support. You know, it's been incredible, overwhelming, really, in terms of what our potential is now. Like, we've won it. I think we haven't even tapped the potential yet, because everybody will get behind us. We can get 5,000 fans to games. I think when we play WVU, I've talked to Strats, you know, the coach there, and we've talked about, we can get 10,000 people to this game. I mean, it's a hot ticket, you know, and I think we've got to find out a way to do that. We've got to find a way to sort of grow the program. But I mean, the support from the community is there. The sky's the limit, really.
Chris Grassi, the head coach of Marshall, national champions, defeating Indiana. All right, so does this change recruiting to any degree? I mean, obviously, you got a lot of eyeballs on you now. Just talk to me about your recruiting policy and how this could affect that.
Yeah, we've had to be very creative in recruiting, and I can tell you we haven't won a ton of recruiting battles. I mean, there's not many I can think of where we really go head to head with a like program and win. I think that'll change now. I think that's already getting a little bit easier, you know, judging by the players that have reached out to us and you know, what's going on with the transfer portal and things like that. So I think it'll get easier. You know, we obviously want to continue to have a plan to develop. You know, we want to maybe start a soccer school here or academy where we're bringing in more and more teams and kind of coaching them here, maybe in a club system or an intramural type system where we can kind of maximize that. We've got big ideas for, you know, 3 or 4 pitch facility. You know, we just... the sky's the limit, like I said, and I think recruiting will get easier. I think we'll feel that we have good players, so we have good connections in Brazil, Germany, Africa. We have a lot of these guys coming over to play in high school everywhere. We just kind of felt like we had to do things differently and run a little bit further and faster than everybody else because we couldn't compete head to head with a UNC or an Indiana or a Clemson, you know, in terms of, you know, cost of attendance dollars and scholarship and financial aid packages and things like that. It just wasn't the same, you know, playing with maybe a different budget. So I think that won't, you know, that won't change overnight, but I think that's going to change. There's a lot of support coming in, a lot of things we can offer in addition to our current guys in terms of summer school and things like that. Now that is really going to make us a little bit more attractive and continuing education after, you know, pro contracts and things like that is all on the table now. So we can give our guys a better experience and then we can continue. I love my guys. I think we play very technical, possession-based style of play. We need really technical players. So we're not going to change a whole lot in terms of what we do, but now I think we'll have the ability to go and compete for the best kid from Columbus Crew, you know, for example, hopefully, as opposed to in the past, you know, we're not in that conversation.
Yeah, that's got to be exciting to you, know, the reach and additional potential that this can get you. I would imagine that the attention goes across the state of West Virginia, obviously, because it's a place that doesn't have any professional teams in any other sports.
Yeah, and I mean, it's. I think there's a lot of pride from the community. You know, a lot of the sports, you know, the sports fans and the sports community around here, especially the youth soccer. You know, the support from those guys has been amazing. So I think in terms of, you know, top level or the highest level they can get, obviously Columbus and Cincinnati are, you know, 2.5 hours from us. And, you know, there's those MLS teams that we can go, guys can go see. But in terms of, you know, an hour down the road, you know, we're going to hit, you know, 300, 400,000 people in West Virginia who, you know, really, if they want to watch soccer, this is where they're going to come.
Fantastic stuff. Chris Grassi joining us. National champions, Marshall, the Thundering Herd. You know, one thing that jumps out to me as well is that I love the fact that your athletic department did not waste any time signed you to a 5-year deal. I mean, this is tremendous because they're looking at you as a huge asset for the future, and they give you that type of a contract extension, which means, you know, here's a university that really, I think, jumped on something quick here and did it in a great way.
Yeah, no, it's really fantastic. And obviously, you know, we've what's not in theirs, we get raises for the staff, and there we get to keep my staff together. I work with a wonderful group of, you know, young coaches, you know, in their 30s, who sort of early 30s, and just watching those guys work together and buzz off each other and come up with ideas. And, you know, it's really, I'm really glad we can look after them. And obviously for me and my family, we have great friends here. We live in a lovely neighborhood. We have a very nice life. And I think to be able to know, okay, we're going to be here for 5 years and they're going to back us. It's not just, it's going to be 5 years doing things the way we've done them. It's going to be 5 years and we're going to grow together as a community. We're going to grow together as a program. You know, that's exciting. I mean, I've talked about this a little bit. I left Charleston known for a fact that we were going to win a national championship and given that up to move here. And obviously, you know, Strats did a great job, was my assistant at the time, stepped up and took the program the next year. And that was a difficult decision. But I needed to grow as a coach. I needed to grow as a person. I was stagnating, you know, knowing that you're going to win 20 games a season and then it's going to get challenging. Wasn't good for me as a coach, you know, at the time of my life. So I'm always somebody who looks first and foremost at, like, how can we grow? Where's the challenge? How do I get better? And so there's a challenge here to completely redefine Marshall soccer, to completely grow the program, to really have a big say in the future of Marshall soccer and what it looks like for the state, what it looks like for the university. And so that's the challenge I'm massively excited about. And so 5 years, I think it's going to go like that, you know.
Chris Grassi, the head coach of Marshall, Thundering Herd national champions. All right, I do have to take you into a guy that was a mentor of yours, that you were an assistant coach under at Marshall, and Bob Gray. Just talk about his influence. And I saw a wonderful moment with you and him with the national championship trophy, I believe. And I just thought, you know, I looked at that and I said, man, I mean, that's really what it's about.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to talk about Dan Kelly, who was my coach at AB, who, you know, introduced me to Bobby. And obviously Dan played for Bobby. And then, you know, Bobby, I got to know Bobby in an alumni game. And, you know, I was playing for the alumni for AB and Bobby was playing as well. And I picked the ball up. I beat three guys. I got fouled in the box and I picked up the ball to the penalty. And Bobby just stood off me. No, son, this is how you do it. He took the penalty off me, put it in the top corner. And I was like, you know, that's the first time I got to really know Bobby. So, he's been a good friend. Like, he lives in town. He could have been the old coach leaving and a new coach coming in. It could have been awkward. He never made it awkward. He always was there to support. He was the biggest fan. He was always in the stands watching us. He's just been, you know, in the ability for him to kind of step back and make that transition easy. I could never be more appreciative of that, you know. And obviously, you know, he's a lovely human being and you know, knows everybody and has always got a smile and a word and a joke for everybody. A bad joke sometimes, but a joke for everybody nonetheless. And you know, that meant a lot, you know, and that really made the transition here so much easier and helped us, you know, get to where we are.
Talking to Chris Grassi, last one before I get you go. Okay, you're a Newcastle guy. I would assume you're a Geordie, right? I spent a little time up there, very memorable time there. So tell me a little bit about your influences growing up in Newcastle United and how that may have shaped, you know, your love of the game.
Yeah, it's, you know, my dad, you know, who works with us still today, would take me, you know, as a young boy, as, you know, as far back as I can remember, I could be on the terraces there watching Newcastle United. And we've generally sucked, you know, we were in the second division for a little bit when I was growing up in the 80s. And then we had this guy, Kevin Keegan, took over and, you know, we started called the entertainers and we had guys who could dribble. And, you know, one of my first memories, actually, even before that, was we got the first Brazilian to play in the English top flight, a guy called Mirandina, and he moved into our neighborhood, which is, I don't know why you would do that, but he did that, and he came over. But just watching him play on the ball, and that kind of inspired, you know, my sort of love of Brazilian soccer and watching the Pele videos and the Brazil 70, you know, the third victory, and, you know, all of that stuff just kind of cemented in my mind, like, this is the way the game should be played. And then we had, obviously, Alan Shearer, David Ginola, Tino Asprilla, these guys who are exciting and skillful footballers and allows you to play in this expansive, entertaining way, you know. And I thought, that stuck with me. And then we had that again through Bobby Robson with young talent coming through. And then, you know, basically Newcastle is a great sports book called 50 Years of Hurt, about Newcastle not winning a trophy for 50 years. And it basically details every single mistake that the club made. We would get like this, and then we would drop off. So I think in my career, I've been able to look and learn so much more about what not to do and like where the pitfalls may be. And that's been so helpful. And just being a Newcastle fan, unfortunately, you know, we it's tough work. It's difficult, but you can see the failings of culture, the failings of philosophy, the failings of tactics. You can see it every day. And that's been as much of an influence on me as anything else, you know?
Well, Chris, thank you so much. It's been really wonderful catching up with you, and I appreciate your time because I know you're a very busy guy. You're off to another event. Thanks so much for coming on the program tonight, shedding light on the program and your career. We really appreciate it.
Hey, Glenn, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right, that's Chris Grassi, head coach of Marshall. That's how we wrap it up tonight. They are the national champions, the Thundering Herd. Once again, a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors, DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual. John and his firm is going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. And also a quick shout-out here to FM Kitchen. FM Kitchen near Washington and Shepherd, great place to go watch games, great craft cocktails combined with excellent food. You don't always get that. It is FM Kitchen and Bar. For Aaron Raybould, I'm Glenn Davis. Not till next week. It'll be tomorrow night. We're back on the air with another show. That'll do it. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Soccer Matters.
ESPN 97.5.